This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. If you're looking for something to do with the kids over the holidays, you should check out Disney's newest animated film, Moana. It's the story of a young girl who leaves the comfort of her home island to travel the ocean and save her people. And while you're getting swept along on Moana's journey, you'll want to take a minute to enjoy the scenery, which in this case is a lot of water. There's so much of it in the film. Shallow water, stormy water, water that splashes and crests in waves. There's even a water high five, water that has emotion. And it all looks and moves just like the real stuff. It is amazing, which any animator will tell you is it's no easy feat to do. So how did the Disney team do it? Research, computer algorithms, a healthy grasp of fluid dynamics? How about imagination? That is the Walt Disney way, of course. Joining me to discuss the animation science behind the new film Moana are my guests, Amy Smead, head of animation, and Marlon West, head of effects animation at Walt Disney Animation Studios. Amy and Marlon, welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you for having us.
Thrilled to be here. Thank you.
I just want to remind our listeners that we won't be taking your calls today, but you can comment on Twitter at SciFry or at ScienceFriday.com. What's the difference between your two jobs, Amy and Marlon? What do you do and what do you do?
So I'm a character animator, and we're responsible for doing all of the characters, whether it's a human, an animal, or in Moana's case, the performance part of the water.
And the effects are, as you could imagine, all the water in other movies, snow, rain, fire, lava in this film. So generally, most of the stuff that moves, it's not the character.
Mm-hmm. But the water in this film really is a character, isn't it, Amy?
It is. And in this case, it was a huge collaboration between our two departments. When the water was a character, we had a very rough rig, and it was similar to almost like a sock puppet. And we would animate the water, and then we would work with the effects animators, and they would make it actually look like water with the bubbles and the water effects part of it.
Yeah, we would do a simulation of water, you know, over top of the animated character of the water, and also, like, if you can imagine, like a Ziploc bag full of water, and if you shook it, it would have bubbles inside it. So we would add that as well. And then it was very important to kind of stitch it back into the rest of the ocean so it didn't look like a water creature that lived in the ocean. It was very important that it felt like the ocean itself.
Yeah, Marlon, his partner Dale, and then Hiram was my partner. We, the four of us, met very early on, and we kept talking about we really want to make sure this doesn't look like a sea creature. We really want it to look like water and not like this other being.
Yeah, because it really does look like real water. What did you know when you started this movie that it was going to change the way you animated water?
Yeah, we knew that we had two big challenges on the film that we had to do hundreds of natural water shots of shorelines, like you mentioned in the introduction, and storms at sea and any number of things, boat wakes, a lot of things that just had to be in the background at a scale that we've never done it before. But then we have the ocean itself as a character that was a very, very close collaboration between our two departments. And to try to make it look like natural water but still hold the character performance and the very important silhouette shapes that our animators, character animators, work towards and not have it look too agitated. Like the things that we thought would make it look like natural water very often made the character feel maybe too aggressive or too wet. Well, not too wet, but too, you know, too agitated. So we very often had to modulate how much we were actually adding natural water qualities to the character.
Did you have to take into account the physics of water, even the salt versus the fresh kind of water?
Yeah. We have a lot of water solvers that are either off the shelf, but we created one for this show called Splash. So the kind of physics of water are pretty, understood by, people a lot smarter than myself. So, but what we actually always thrive for here in the studio, both in character animation and effects, is something that's not necessarily realistic but believable. Mm-hmm. So, our water in this film is on a level that, looks like water and behaves how people think it behaves, but it's not photorealistic.
Mm-hmm. What you mentioned this term water solver. How does that work? What is that?
So, you know, in effects, there's a lot of simulations that we do. And so, you know, a solver, you know, millions of, in this case, very often billions of particles being created to simulate water in a natural way. But then our challenge is to get the performance that we're looking for, to make it look exciting, to make it look beautiful. And in the case of our water, the ocean as a character, it's to make it, you know, emotive.
Mm-hmm.
So that takes a lot of kind of fighting against physics very often.
Amy, how much research did your team do just on water and how it moves? Did you actually go out and study a lot of it?
I think Marlin's team did more studying of water than we did. For us, we really wanted to character the water. And for the performance of the water, there's times when if you move the water up very slowly, that means something very different than if it rises very quickly. So we were more in the characterizing the water, where I think the physics side of it was more on Marlin's side. We do tons of research for all of our films. So there's tons of research everywhere within the film, not just the water. But yeah. I think that was more Marlin's side.
Yeah, very often, you know, part of just the very beginning of the filmmaking process here, our directors, production designers, story department, they'll do a deep dive into whatever subject, take trips, research trips. And then we also have folks come in to the studio and, you know, lecture us about certain subjects. You know, they'll bring animals in if it's necessary on certain films. But we did do a lot of our own kind of studies, you know, swimming pools, or we went to Mission Bay down in Long Beach to measure how much, you know, light travels underwater and under certain conditions so we could get it right. And a lot of these times, they're cross-department collaborations. It's character animation and effects, but it's also our lighting department, our look department, especially when it comes to shorelines that we had to get right. You know, we have water going up and making the sand wet, and then the sand dries as the water pulls back. And all these things that are kind of happening in the background, no one goes like, boy, those shorelines really look amazing. but if they didn't, like, you know, operate correctly, they would look cheesy, even to a lap baby.
You know, I was paying special attention to the character's hair, because I remember we did a show especially about Tangled when Tangled was created and how the physics of all that animation happened. And I saw you, Amy, in the movie that her hair gets wet a lot. Everybody's hair gets wet, and it looked very realistic. Did you spend a lot of time on that?
We did. We had, and one of the other things, we really wanted to have Moana be able to interact with her hair. And that's something that's very, very difficult to do in CG. And we had a program that was created called Quicksilver. Brian Whited and Marianne Simmons, they worked a lot on that. And Marianne had also worked a lot on the Tangled hair. So it was kind of pushing beyond what we did on Tangled. And if Moana was interacting with the hair, then we could pose the hair. And then we could send that to our technical animation department. And the tech anim department, they're the ones that are responsible for doing the hair and the cloth. So we pass it down to them, and then they would kind of make it work with the, you know, with the breeze and depending on, or if it's wet. With Moana's, the coils in her hair, they developed a ton of technology to figure that. How do they bounce off each other? And there's so many strands in each of those coils.
Do you create one hair and then reproduce the hairs, or does each hair have a physics of its own, how it's going to interact?
I don't know the exact answer to that. I know they spent a lot of time in the look in our simulation mm-hmm. departments with all of those coils, and we had the ability in animation to do just a tiny coil, or we could take a broader area of the hair. So I think it was all individually created.
Yeah, it's generally like grouped in regions.
Yeah, you know, there also was a unique aspect of the film is that you had the bodies of many of them were tattooed, and the tattoos themselves were animated, which I thought was an amazing little device that you used, Amy.
Yeah. With this being a Ron and John film, too, and they come from traditional, it was something that was so fun for us to figure out. But yes, it's a hand-drawn tattoo that we mapped onto Maui's CG body. And the fun thing for us is we had so many animators coming to say, can I please work on a Minnie Maui scene? Because it was the Minnie Maui character was led by Eric Goldberg. Eric was responsible for the genie in Aladdin, and he's an idol to all of us animators. So we had so many animators wanting to work and collaborate with Eric on those scenes. And they would, before they would start the scene, the two of them would get together and they would talk about what's going to happen in the scene. For instance, there's a scene where CG Maui pecks Minnie Maui. So they figured out, Eric drew a little X of where the CG Maui would poke him. And they figured all that out. They collaborated a ton. And then that's what you ended up seeing on the big screen. So it was really fun for those, our two groups, to collaborate really closely together.
How many people actually, for each one of those scenes, and let's talk about the scene with the hair and the water, how many people actually sort of touch each one of different people or touch one of those things?
Yeah.
There's probably, in any particular scene, without exaggerating, would say a couple dozen between the story artist who storyboards it, our production designers doing costume design, character animators, tech anim, effects, lighting, rigging. It's such a collaborative process to do a CG film, and every performance and every kind of challenge takes cross-department collaboration.
You can see, because in some of these films, the credits take almost as long as the movie to scroll.
There's a lot of people that
there's
work
a lot
on
of people
films,
that, to make them happen.
How do you animate a scene in which the water is doing so many different things at once, Marlon?
Well, very often, we'd have scenes where, there's natural water in the background, and then you have the performance, the character animation performance, and you have to stitch that back in. One of the things we did to try to remind the viewer that this is actually the ocean and this is performance, that after the big beat of whatever performance, whether it's a high five or a head nod, we would stop using the character animation and then just let the physics of the natural physics of water take over, and then the ocean would just fall back into place. And that was really kind of an important little thing we did, because they would animate the performance, completely throughout the scene. But we would decide the important part of the performance, the storytelling part, and then let the simulation take over again and let those droplets of water just fall back into the ocean. Because we all kind of agreed that the ocean would not have to duck its head back down or pull its arm back into the ocean. So, those are the kind of discussions and arguments grown-ups have in our building. Like, at what point does the ocean become a simulation again?
Amy, was it more or less difficult to animate Taka, the female lava monster there?
Oh,
Taka. Oh, yeah, that was...
Yeah. She was an awesome character. I loved, there were some tests done very early on, and that was another example of where we were working really, really closely with effects, with the lava coming down. We're always trying to get an emotion and a feeling through our characters. And so we needed to make sure with the lava it wasn't going to distract from that. And she's huge. She has a very large scale. So we had to try to figure that out as well. If she moves too quick, it doesn't look like she has weight to her. That it doesn't look like she has the scale. And if she moves too slowly, then it's not a real threat to Moana. So we did some tests. And then as animators came on to the film and started animating her, they were doing amazing things. And I love the way that she turned out.
We detail geeks like the fact that you had a little dark crust on her as she cooled off on the skin.
We try to have like truth in material as much as we can, even though our films are fantasies. So it was great that Teka, when she was angry, was dripping lava, like a volcano really, is. When it's really active, it's the most fiery. And that when she cooled, she would cool off when she calmed down. So that was actually a very cool thing to be able to have the real characteristics of lava or volcano kind of match up with the character performances.
I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from PRI Public Radio International. Talking with Amy Smead, head of animation at Walt Disney Animation Studios, and Marlon West, head of effects animation at Walt Disney Animation Studios. Where do you draw the line for realism? I mean, is it a concern that things become too creepy looking, like Uncanny Valley sort of thing?
Indeed.
Yeah. Definitely. That's something for us. We have a lot of animators. Before we are starting our scenes, there are some animators that will thumbnail out their ideas. Other animators will go, we have a reference room, and they'll film them themselves acting their scene. Even when that happens, we're not copying that performance frame by frame because we don't want the characters to look like us. And we're always caricaturing those performances. So we're pushing the timing. We're pushing the poses. We're always looking for the silhouettes of the character. There's certain principles of animation that we're always looking at. And I agree. I think if it starts looking too realistic, it can start looking a little creepy. So we do spend a lot of time figuring out just characterizing those performances.
Mm-hmm. And how much do you count on our brain filling in what you're trying to animate? You know, because our brains do that. Mm-hmm. They fill in stuff that's not really there sometimes. You count on that, or?
It's funny because you would think you could count on that. But, you know, like we talked about earlier, the amount of people who look at all of these shots over and over and over mm-hmm. again. So every shot of the film, Amy and myself and generally everybody who worked on it, the directors, I mean, they've seen each of these shots, without exaggeration, dozens of times. So people tend to point out every little thing
that's
not right. And we fix them as best we can. So there's very little that we're like, no, no one's looking over there.
Yeah.
That's not really important because you should be looking at the character, Moana's eyes, because that may work if you watch these shots like three times, but we watch them dozens of times.
Yeah.
And eventually somebody's going to notice like, oh, there's a pop over there, or that, mm-hmm. that tree that wasn't there in the last shot, or there's not footprints back there, or something.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we don't count on folks filling in gaps as much as you would think we should.
Yeah, we're very detail oriented.
Yeah, you would have it, and it really shows. You know, beauty is in the details, and really does show in the movie. And if you want to see some clips of what the water animation looked like at different stages of filming, we have those on our website. They're really cool. Go to sciencefriday.com/Moana. We're going to take a break. We're talking this hour about animation science in the new Disney film Moana with Amy Smead, head of animation, and Marlon West, head of effects animation at Walt Disney Animation Studios. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Ira Flato. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flato. We're talking this hour about animation science in the new Disney film Moana. Amy Smead, head of animation, and Marlon West, head of effects animation at Walt Disney Animation Studios, are joining us. Are you working on anything, you know, for virtual reality? I was sitting there watching the film. It was just gorgeous. And I'm saying, wouldn't it be something if I'm watching this and I could turn my head around and see all that ocean and all the people around me? Is that something that you guys are thinking about?
That would be really cool, but I don't know. I haven't been in any conversations where we've been talking about that. There might be some people in technology that are talking about that.
Yeah, there are folks in the studio that are very, very interested in VR. And, you know, we did do like a VR test for Zootopia and like on one of the street scenes. We did not do one for Moana. It would have been cool.
Yeah.
But I have to say, one of the things about water is so kind of difficult and expensive to do. To do it in 360 would be quite daunting indeed.
You need to double your budget. Let's talk a bit about the cutting edge of animation technology, for example. Let me begin by asking you, could you have made this movie the same way, let's say, 5 years ago? Was the technology available to you?
That's a good question. I think we would have found a way to make the movie because we're always presented with challenges on each film and we find a way to make it happen. Whether it would have been at this level, I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, because I have to say, Amy and I, we work very close with our software engineers and our technology department. I'm not so sure that our directors and our heads of story are that dialed in or care one iota about what we can actually physically do. They're preoccupied with coming up with the best story ever that they can, and we scramble and make it happen. So I think we would have maybe been developing water instead of snow 5 years ago if we wanted to make this movie then.
What do you mean? What was the toughest part that you needed the new technology to do? Was it the water, making it look the way it did?
I think the scale of it. You know, both. I've been here since the 2D days. So I started off on Lion King, and you know, water is always kind of tough for animation to do, either both drawing and creating CG, because it's very complicated. It changes its physics. You know, a splash comes up in a big sheet. It turns into beads and then into droplets, and they go back and make other little events on the surface of the water as it goes back in. And everybody knows that that's happening, and they take it for granted. So we usually have a couple dozen water scenes in a movie, and we had hundreds of them. So it was a big... It was a big challenge to be able to do the scale of the water, even, like I said, water that you're taking for granted, even just the wakes behind the water. We had to do them on a scale that we've never done before. So that was a huge challenge, one that we started working on like 2.5 years ago.
Yeah, once we know what type of film we're making, and the directors in the story department, our technology teams start way before figuring out all the technology, whether it's water or lava or whatever that is.
Yeah, like, you know, I worked on Frozen as well, and there wasn't really truly believable snow solvers for deep snow. You know, there was always little kind of footprints and things in animated films before, but people walking around in waist-deep snow, people hadn't done. And our early tests showed that they weren't very convincing. So, like, our films always have some type of creative desire to drives a technical challenge and solution.
So if it takes years in development, there must be films that are in development now that we don't know about. I'm sure you're not going to tell us either.
There are a lot.
There are.
But
yes.
So is there new technology you would like to see? You're going to say to the technologists, hey, we need to be able to do this in the next movie. Get us new technology to do that. You know, where is that cutting edge? What if I gave you a blank check? I'll give you the blank check question we give on Science Friday. If you could, if you needed to develop a new technology to do something in the animated world, what would you like to? What would you love to have?
Oh gosh!
Wow,
that's a good question.
I mean, would it be 3D? I mean, I'm thinking, you know, would it be a 4D or something? You know, we talked about virtual reality. Not sure.
That would be really cool.
Is it a question of just money, then, of investing in virtual reality?
It's money and computing power, because there's no limit to the imagination of people in this building, both the technicians and storytellers. But you can only just push so many pixels, you know, being computed, so many particles and characters. So we do run into the problem of just being able to render the images of our films in a timely fashion at the level that we like to do it. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I think for us in character animation, there are times when there are just efficiency things where I just want to ram my hands into the computer and move the character around, but I can't. I have my mouse where I'm moving that around. And really cool technology-wise.
Yeah.
That would be really great.
Yeah. You want Minority Report capabilities is what you want to move.
Yes.
Yeah, because we are, you know, we are making very complicated imagery and very emotionally kind of hopefully effective images. And, yeah, we are using a mouse or a stylus to draw or a keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
And so they aren't the tools that Man and Sister Kind have been using for tens of thousands of years to create things. You know, people have been getting their fingers wet with things more often.
And there's 24 frames per second. So with every 1 second, that's 24 drawings or 24 poses. For us on CG films, they're really poses that we're creating in the computer. But there's 24 just for 1 second. So it kind of gives you an idea of that it's a time-consuming, it's really fun, but it is a time-consuming process. We'll animate a scene for, it's probably like 3 or 4 seconds in a week.
Hmm. Well, I have one final question, because I know our listeners are going to be interested in this. If they are interested, if they're in college or school or whatever, and they're interested in working in animation, how do you get into the job? What should they study? How should they get into the business?
For me in character animation, I went to an art school in Chicago, and I took tons of life drawing and painting classes. Even though we're creating films today that are computer generated, I still think drawing is very, very important. And for us, we are also studying a lot of acting and performance because we're breathing life into these characters. So I think you still, even though we're in our desks, nobody sees us acting, we spend a ton of our time really acting and figuring out what the performance is of those characters. And then also body mechanics and physics, how your body moves across the room, whether you're bending down to pick something up or opening a door. We have to have a really good understanding of what's happening when you're taking footsteps. You know, your hips are shifting over to one foot so you don't fall over. Just having an understanding of the physics in your body, I think, is super important. And then for us at Disney Animation, what we look for is a reel that has animation tests. And we like to see acting performance tests with where it's a character with dialogue, as well as some tests that are showing some sort of physicality.
Yeah, I would agree with everything that Amy said. And for effects, you know, we actually are creating like natural phenomenon quite a bit. But when we look at a reel, we're also looking to see if someone can actually caricature that stuff a little bit more. Because, you know, like I said, you know, the computer wants to do a very realistic simulation.
Yeah.
And that's fine. And a lot of people, once they learn these packages, they can do that. But our effects have to be sad. They have to get laughs. They have to look scary. Mm-hmm. And so if you could caricature fire and smoke and dust in a way to support storytelling and production design, that's what we're looking for.
Yeah. I got what I needed, what I was looking for. A great interview. Thank you both for taking time to be with me today. Amy Smead, head of animation, and Marlon West, head of effects animation at Walt Disney Animation Studios, talking about a really terrific animated film, Moana. Have a great weekend. Have a happy holiday to you.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Oh, yeah. It was wonderful to be here.